Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today we welcome Bob Tomich to the microphones. Bob's a senior lecturer and University of Wisconsin Extension horticulturist, and really happy to have him back to talk with us about all things relating to the garden. Certainly, if you have questions, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. And you'll have to excuse my voice a little bit today. I picked up a little cold, one of those summer colds that sometimes befalls me. It's the first one I've had this summer. So, Bob, hopefully I'll, if I lose my voice entirely, just go ahead without me.
I'll just talk and we'll just carry on. Right?
Carry on without me. Oh, man, I tell you what, dry conditions are really the in the news now.
Oh, definitely. We had our meeting this morning with the ag agents from around the state, and even though there's little spots reported of rain here and there, and, of course, southwest Wisconsin got a little bit of a dose, but it's moderately droughty across most of the state, and things are really taking it in the shoulder right now. Lawns are definitely browned out. Of course, they're dormant, and they'll come back whenever we do have some rain here, but I think the real concern it has to do with the trees and shrubs that we've included in our landscape.
Yeah, and those trees and shrubs, we sometimes ignore them when it comes to watering.
Well, they're green, and so we kind of look away until all of a sudden they start turning brown and or flagging, and sometimes it's too late to really come back and do something by that time. They've been stressed in the root system and everything else. If you have any trees and shrubs that you've put into the yard or into the landscape in the last 3 years, definitely should have them on a weekly watering program. In the case of trees, we're saying about 10 to 12 gallons per inch of trunk diameter is a good application rate. Have it at a very slow so it doesn't run off. You know, the soils are so dry and hard right now, the water will run off before it soaks in if you do put it on too fast.
And that's another good reason not to fertilize lawns. Now, you certainly don't want to do that.
Definitely not. Of course, we usually encourage people to wait and hold off on the fertilizing now until about Labor Day weekend. But even at that time, if it continues to be dry, don't be applying fertilizer. Wait until the lawn is actively growing, it's green, and that usually happens after we've had a couple of good rains. Once that turf is about 3 inches or tall, it's going to even hold in place those fertilizer particles, and so that fertilizer will be fertilizing the lawn and not running off into our waterways.
And you know what? When those lawns are brown, I haven't had to do a lot of lawn mowing this summer. That's one.
Then you got more time for fishing, right?
Save me a little bit there. Peg and Chilton, it's your turn. Hi, Peg. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm solving a mystery here. I've noticed the last few days there's finger-sized holes appearing in my flower bed, and when I came back this morning, I saw two large flying insects digging those holes, but I don't know what they're doing it for. I'm guessing they're going to lay eggs in them, but they're dark-winged fly with orange bodies and a dark tail. Does this sound like anything you've heard of?
No, that one you're going to have to save for Phil. In fact, if you can catch one of those, take it down to your extension office, they'll send us a picture of that. It could be you could be doing one of two things. Either it's laying eggs under the mulch, or it could be feeding on some of the roots in your perennial structures there. It could be one or the other. But until I see the insect or we can identify it, I'm at a loss.
So it was green, but greenish and black as well?
Maybe slightly bluish, but not green.
Right.
It's not a beetle. It's more like a fly.
I was thinking of a mud dauber.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a mud dauber, but
no, it's not a mud dauber.
Okay. Well, we'll have to save that one for Phil or give Phil a. Actually, Phil's on Wednesday.
Okay.
Next Wednesday, so tune in and Peg and give him a call.
I'll do that.
All right.
Great.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Willem in Colfax, your turn. Hi, Willem.
I guess I have another bug question. I have some Heliopsis, and they're covered with these little red things that are all covering the stems. And when you squeeze them, they're red. And
yeah.
Yep.
Teeny little bugs.
Right. They're probably either aphids or spider mites. It all depends how fast they're moving. But what they're doing is sucking the sap out of the plant itself. There's a high population this year. Even in our forest trees, we're seeing more than usual. And that has to do with the fact that we haven't had rain. Rain often knocks off a lot of these insects, and so we don't see them on the tree. The second thing is, when it's dry like this, we have no fungal diseases that usually attack a lot of the insects, plug up their breathing systems. So the populations are very high right now.
And so anything we need to do about those then?
Well, you can... try using some insecticide or insecticidal soaps that work fairly well. People tend to focus those on specific plants that they want to save or culture, and that would be your perennial flowers in your flower bed. I would look at the insecticidal soaps as a starting point. They're fairly easy to apply, fairly safe. There are some other chemical types of insecticides, but make sure two things. One, it's labeled for knocking down spider mites, because they tend to be a little bit different than the normal insect category that we have. And secondly, if it's any vegetable type of crop, you have a waiting period when you apply those chemicals until you can harvest the produce.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Willem. Sheena in Exelad, your turn.
Hi, I've got little black bugs that are eating my broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower leaves. We're trying to keep garden as organic as possible, so I'm wondering if you guys can give me some suggestions on how to get rid of them.
Okay, I would take a double look. If you have holes in your cabbage or broccoli or whatever, look on the underside of the leaf, because it could be cabbage worms that are doing that.
Okay.
You're just blaming the little black guys. But in any case, the insecticidal soaps will work fairly well. If you're going to use any of the... staying organic, you're going to have to stay with the insecticidal soaps. That's probably the main route that you're going to have to go. And they work very well. Apply them on about every 4 days to 7 days, depending on what the weather conditions are, because it then keeps that the insects away. If we wait after rainfall, it washes off that product, you have to reapply it again. So you have to be very rigorous and
diligent
about doing that. Good choice of words there.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks, Sheena. Thanks for calling. Rudy in Janesville, your turn now. Hi, Rudy.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a birch tree that's 40 years old or better, and the leaves are pretty near denuded from it. And when you look at the leaves, they look like something is eaten and it looks like Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two things there.
Yeah, right. Birch leaf miners could have possibly chewed the holes or some other type of
bronze
miner.
Birch borer, would that?
Yeah, well, birch borers attack the trunk system.
Oh, okay,
and
that's right.
He's seeing the leaves. But the birch trees are really suffering this year. One is over the years we've liked the birch tree, and we probably placed it in landscape settings that it shouldn't be located in. It likes a cool environment. To encourage that, you can either place mulch on the soil. That keeps it a little bit cooler. Keeping the lawn cut at about 3 inches, that helps shades a little bit, and placing that tree on a watering system. This year we're seeing a lot of yellowing on the birch leaves, where the veins seem to be green, but the interveinal areas are yellow, and that's because of nutrient stress. If there's no water getting up into the tree, there's no nutrients being carried up there, and so it is being stressed, and we're probably going to lose some birches this year.
I think I'm going to lose mine because it's about 90% denuded.
Well, you could still try. I mean,
you could try putting it on a watering schedule and see what happens. That 10 gallons per every inch of trunk diameter will give you an idea about how much you need to apply. But I wouldn't put money on that one.
40-year-old birch.
Well, it's time for it to come down, I think. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Reed in Clintonville, it's your turn. Hi, Reed.
Larry, thank you, and guest, and thank you for this opportunity. Last year, I believe it was, you had two young ladies on. I believe they were sisters, one perhaps working at UW-Madison.
Yeah.
And it would be nice, not to malign your guest here, but if you'd have them on again sometime, not to discount your guest. And also... at that time, I think you talked about the Speedy Weedy, and I don't remember if you gave an address or a website or something for that, and perhaps you could maybe look that up again and and give that over the air sometime. Also, I have a question about a tree. We have a red maple, and it's got two large suckers now that are starting to grow out of the top. Would it be best for me to wait until fall or colder weather and snip them off, or is it all right to do it now if there's a little bit of a drought and maybe not so much activity with the tree? And then the last thing is I'd like to say hello to Willem from one potter to another.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Reed.
Okay. Dealing with the pruning right now, it being dry and that, hold off on any of the pruning until winter or fall sets in. The best time to be doing any pruning on our trees, of course, is probably January through about March. We have no insects to carry in diseases. Right now, that tree is going to start adapting itself for hardiness for winter, even though it looks like it's a long ways off. That's what's happening. So I would hold off on the pruning if you can until then.
And the Speedy Weedy, by the way, is about 40 inches long. It's something that you insert into the soil and you twist it a little bit and you can pull the weeds out, individual weeds out right by the roots without having to bend over. Although I got to tell you, as hard as the soil is now, the Speedy Weedy might not be very speedy unless you had watered. It wouldn't work otherwise. But thanks for calling, Reed. Appreciate it. Brian in St. Louis, Missouri. Your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you, Larry?
Great.
Hey, I'm on the cell phone, so I'm going to ask my question and get off here so I don't lose my call. But I have a problem with ticks in the yard. What do I spray on there to get rid of them?
Well, you're talking wood ticks, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the wood ticks kind of go through a cycle. They do need a rodent or something to spend part of their life on, and so keeping your lawn mowed fairly short and regularly is going to keep that tick and rabbit population out a little bit farther. That's going to be one of the things. Other than that, cultural management, you're going to kind of have to live with the problem. I don't know if you live in a rural area. Get some bandy chickens.
Get some bandy chickens? Okay.
That's not all a joke.
Because it works.
It works. It actually does work. If you're in that situation, but really you can't spray for them.
No, it's something, and a lot of the insecticides don't impact ticks because they're in a whole different family of insect group, and so the insecticides aren't going to work. So we laugh at the chicken population, but I've had people call, you know, where they've bought an old farmstead and nobody's mowed the grass for a couple of years. You know, they walk through it, they're coming back with ticks, and get a few bandy chickens, they'll be out there feeding. And you know, if you can handle the other fertilization problem on the other end, you've got it made.
All right. Thanks, Brian. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking today with Bob Tomich, senior lecturer at UW Extension Horticulturist. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking all things in the garden today with Bob Tomich, UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Glad to have him along, and thank you for listening in. Phil in La Crosse, I believe, is a question for us. So let's go to Philip. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have two questions, but the first one, I have a weeping willow that is yellowing out quite a bit and actually having some branch die off. Is there a disease that might be coming around, or is it, again, a watering thing that you described with the birches? And the second thing I have is I almost want to stop the growth of my broccoli. I'm getting broccoli awful early. Is it too late to replant some broccoli and get it going again? And I'll take my answer up here.
All right, thank you.
With the willow, you probably hit right on both. One thing, it could be water stress. But the other thing, there is also a canker that you'll find in the crotch angles of some of the branches that are a little bit lower. You can identify that by kind of a blackening of the area. It almost starts getting sunken, and so that's going to deteriorate. So there is a fungal problem. So it could be one or the other. In the case of planting out or setting planning for a fall crop of broccoli, cauliflower, and some of the others, this is the time of year we'd be normally seeding that. But as we look at the soil, at the temperatures, they're going to be extremely hot for the next week. And so we're going to have to put it off or do something different. And one of the suggestions I had to a group this morning when we had our telephone conference is that if you're going to look at putting in like your radish, your fall lettuce, your broccoli, your kohlrabi and that, if you're going to seed it, water it down and then cover that area with either a newspaper or a piece of plywood and keep it moist. And then as the plants emerge, then slowly pull off the wood product so that sun can get to it. And then even then, we might want to look at either some shade cloth or something like that. Right now, when the sun is shining, it's a 90-degree day. Those soil temperatures are up to 120 degrees. And those young seedlings, as they germinate, will just simply fry in the ground.
Yeah. And I should just to go back to mention on the trees again, and even to the birch tree, if a person... you know, with bronze birch leaf miner and some of the insects that will attack a birch tree, my understanding is that if you keep the tree healthy, then you don't get those problems. But it's when they're under stress that those insects realize that and attack.
Right. And there are, for somehow, we're not sure if it's some odor that's given off by the stressed tree or whatever, but they are attracted to stressed trees and they'll lay more eggs. At least the insects will lay more eggs for borer problem in the stressed trees than in healthy trees.
On to Jackie in Milwaukee. Hi to you, Jackie.
Good morning.
Morning.
There is a device, the name of which escapes me, where you can put it's like a wand that goes into the ground,
yeah,
and you attach the hose to it. Now, rather than running water across the top of the ground, would that be a good thing to do around the outer perimeter of these trees?
Yes, those are. There's many different watering wands out there, and you can usually find those in the garden center. They work very well. I would penetrate, poke the wand down into the soil about 8 inches to a foot, but depending on the size of the tree, I'd water in 3 or 4 different areas. The other issue is how much water is being emitted from that. You can usually kind of take and place it in a 5-gallon bucket, see how long it takes to fill up, and then you can kind of get this formula as to how long you need to leave that apparatus running in order to get that water supply that you want. It
because
does get
a... you won't waste as much water because the ground is dry. There are cracks like nobody...
That's right.
Right.
Okay.
And you can even, as you have it running, you can poke it down the ground, you know.
A little further.
Right.
I will do that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, a friend of mine, Chuck Johnson, bought one of those at a garage sale, you know. I think he got it for 50 cents, and because it was plugged up, and he, you know, just unplugged it.
Away you go.
And away he went. He still got it years later. On to Lori in Spring Valley. Hi, Lori.
Hi there. Say, I have a question for you about tomatoes. For the last 3 to 4 years, I've had a recurring issue with tomatoes in my garden, and it doesn't seem to matter if I have them in one garden or move them to another garden. And that is that about this time of the season, they start to develop from the lower leaves up a black spot. The leaves then start to turn yellow. There's numerous black spots on each leaf.
Yep.
The leaf then starts to turn yellow. Then the leaf systems die off, and it slowly works its way up to the top of the plant. So I don't get a regrowth of tomatoes. I get one shot at tomatoes, and then the plant is pretty much dead. Some of the tomatoes also display on the bottom of the tomato a brown spot. I've been told this is a blight. I don't know. I've tried lots of different things over the years. I've tried mulching. I've tried putting ground cover of the cloth around the tomatoes. I've tried watering them at the roots. Something that someone else in the neighborhood recently told me, and I haven't had my soil pH tested, so I'm guilty there, is that there's a low calcium level in the soil, and this person has had success by adding, like, barn lime to the soil to improve the calcium level. So any suggestions there? That's a long-winded explanation.
Yeah, you've got two problems going on there. One is the leaf damage that you're describing is either early blight or late blight. I wanted to have to look at how that spot is progressing to identify that. But it's a fungal disease. We'll talk about that. The other browning, if it's on the blossom where the blossom was originally attached, that's blossom end rot. That is true, a shortage of calcium, and right now with it being dry, not enough water is getting to that. And I would guess in the next couple of weeks, that's going to be one of our major questions coming across. What do I do? And it's something that happened probably 2 weeks prior to that. So good watering is going to help alleviate that problem. Sometimes we see brown spots in the fruit because there are some fungal organisms like verticillium wilt that will work their way up through the stem and they'll get into the tomato. And with those, you see just kind of a brownish hue on one side. When you cut it open, it's kind of corky or deteriorated. And so that might be a possibility. Okay, let's back up to the fungal disease problem that's with you every year. If it's there 1 year, it overwinters on leaf litter, it's going to be back the next. When you till your garden, you take your tiller. And I'm guessing when you till one garden, you go over to the other garden without washing it off. And you're carrying that disease from one spot to the next. Some things to consider. If you look in the garden catalogs, there are some disease-resistant varieties of tomatoes that you might want to try. That would be one good choice. Secondly, just take a new area of establish a new garden area and try planting in that. But make sure you wash your garden tiller before you move it in there and start working up that soil so you're not carrying the disease over there. Lastly, you might want to look at some of the mulch materials that are out there. That work fairly well once you set your transplant in or setting it in plastic. And so it'll keep those spore organisms into the soil and not splashing up on the leaf tissue for reinfection. So there are some cultural things that you can do for that prevention.
All right. Good luck, Lori.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go on to Catherine in Milwaukee next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, I have another birch tree question. I moved into my house about 30 years ago, and my trees were fully mature then. Several of the branches, I have two trees in the backyard, are dead. They haven't had leaves for several years, so I've hired someone to come and trim them. But now it occurs to me that maybe I should just have the trees cut down because they are so old, and it costs $700 to get them trimmed. If you think if they trim them well, I do not think they have any disease. The leaves that come in are just fine. Do you think if I have them trimmed, I'll still get a few more years of life out of them?
Well, if they don't look too rattered and tattered from loss of branches, you might be able to get a few years out of them. Trees like birch trees have a life of about 45 years at a maximum, something in that. And once they reach that, they start deteriorating internally. They'll start having rot in the trunk and things like that. And so they can be somewhat dangerous. If you're having a tree person come in to remove them, you might ask that question to them because they've had some experience with the trees. And if they're reputable, they'll probably give you an answer.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Dick in Lake Villa, your turn now. Hi, Dick.
Hi. I have some early yellow squash, and the ends are rotting.
Yep.
And I wonder, are you supposed to pick the flowers off?
The reason they're rotting is because of, one, this drought stress is not getting enough nutrients up in that area, and then soft rots, which are normally diseases we find in the soil. Okay, what to do? You can pull that off, but maybe by the time you pull that blossom off, it's too late. And so what I would recommend doing is just keeping your summer squash on a good fertilizer program so they get plenty of water and it'll carry those nutrients up into the tips of those fruit. Keep in mind, if you got zucchini or something like that, in a week can make a big difference in terms of what we have. But it's just the water, heat, and drought stress that's starting the problem, and then the soft rot, you're right, is coming in through the flower end. And that could be from insects that were visiting that flower. They didn't wash their feet before they got there is one way of describing it. They come into the flower structure to feed, and they leave some of those soft rot organisms. It's just like having your refrigerator. If you leave something in there too long, they're soft rot. So these organisms are very common.
Yeah, well, I've been putting 7 on them, and I water it and fertilize it.
Yep.
And it started real early. The first ones that started coming out a month and a half, 2 months ago.
I might point out that 7 is an insecticide, so it's not going to slow down the damage from the soft rot, which is usually bacterial and fungal in nature.
Okay.
You got to have a fungicide in it.
You would have to, but I would lean on the.
I can't do it now.
I would do the watering, just water very rigorously a couple times a week, and you probably get the plant to outgrow that problem.
And that woman talked about putting calcium in the tomatoes, and a long time ago you had somebody on that said take eggshells and break them up, put in. Well, I did that this year. It didn't work.
I was going to say, they found that eggshells, even though they have a high calcium content, don't break down fast enough for the plant to be able to use it. selecting a fertilizer with calcium in it would be your best approach, but you have to have water available for that calcium product to go into solution to be absorbed by the roots and then carried up into the plant structure.
Yeah, I live on a channel, so I got plenty of water.
Yeah, well, and those eggshells will be decomposing, and so another year from now, you get some help from them. All right, thanks for calling. Margaret in Madison, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Would you please help a poor old distressed widow that doesn't know that much about landscaping?
All right.
I had a tree. The city came out and drilled out a tree stump, you know, and I have to reseed it myself. And I went and got some. I put seed down and put straw. I went and got some straw out at the garden center thing, and I just wonder, can I put too much straw on that? Somebody looked at it and said, aren't you going to smother that? So I put too much on?
When you walk over there, you should be able to see soil particles between the straw, just a little bit.
Okay.
The grass is fairly residual, and what the reason you're putting the straw on is to keep that moist, and especially with this hot weather, keeping the sun from just drying that soil out. The other thing is, now that you've done it, you can always kind of take some of that straw off, and if you put too much on, and of course you'll have to kind of decide that. But keep water it just about every day now when it's hot.
I do. I have to.
Yeah, so it'll come.
And your first grass that comes up probably isn't going to look like the rest of your lawn. If you've got a Kentucky bluegrass lawn, you might think, oh no,
that's
I got.
That's what I've got.
You'll think, oh no, I've got a bunch of weeds coming up here. But actually, that's a. There are some of the seeds are faster growing.
Right, the perennial ryegrass, which is usually, we call it quick green, and in this type of weather, it'll probably green up in 2 weeks, if not sooner. The bluegrass and some of those don't complete their germination until 3-4 weeks out. And so, and the grass color will change as it goes along, too.
Mm-hmm. It'll start out. 3-4 weeks, you say? So, in other words, I don't have to get worried for 3-4 weeks?
Well, you should see some green now after about 14 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just that the first ones you see are not going to look like the rest of your lawn, and you're going to wonder if you planted the wrong thing, and probably didn't.
And the other thing that when you're reseeding like that, there's existing weed seeds that you have in your lawn, like
yeah.
velvet leaf and everything else, and they'll come up, and of course they'll be the broad leaves. What you probably want to do is kind of mow those off after they get up about 5-6 inches, just cut them off. At the stem, and that'll give the grass a chance to keep growing. You'll be able to get ahead of those. But
good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret. Todd and Stevens Point, your turn now. Hi, Todd.
Yeah, thank you. I'm curious. For once, I've got a garden that's doing very well, I've got a row of tomato plants. Half of it is Romas. The other half is, I don't know, more conventional type. And either side, I've got Brussels sprouts and pea pods and that kind of thing. But I'm curious. I have one tomato plant that is easily 5 feet high. And we eventually had to stake it and put, you know, tie it so it wouldn't droop and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just curious, did we, get a seed that came from near a nuclear reactor, or should that be pruned, or should...
But you probably have a seed that got mixed into the batch that tomatoes come in what we call determinate and indeterminate. The determinate types usually are the bush types. They say smaller. The cherry tomatoes, many of those are indeterminate. They'll just continue to grow. And if you would provide plenty of support and our summer was long enough, we'd probably get 12, 15 feet of
yep.
growth there. So you probably better extend that trellis if that's what you got. What's probably happened is when they were sorting out seeds, you might have got a seed like that type in there. When the fruit begins to ripen, you'll probably be able to see that difference in even the fruit size.
Would it be worthwhile, you know, since that plant seems to be so strong and doing so well, to take some of those seeds and you know, save them for next year and plant them early inside before putting them out?
Sure, but why don't you check and see what the fruit tastes like? Because
yeah.
sometimes you end up with something that, well, you know, you don't even want to give to the neighbors. But wait and see what you get, or they might be small fruited or something like that. But if they're good, you like them, save seeds. Tomatoes are one of the easier plants to save seeds from because they tend to self-pollinate the way the flower is structured. And so they're going to show up pretty much like, 95% just like dear old mom. So
yeah.
Your chances are pretty good there.
Given the fact that so much nutrients is going into the to the stem and that kind of thing, would one expect that that stuff is going to ripen later in the year then?
Not necessarily. It depends on what you have in terms of its maturation process. If you fertilize too much nitrogen, of course, then you're going to have a lot of vine growth and very little fruit production. And, you know, that depends on how you took care of it. But just because it's got a lot of growth, it means it's very vigorous. It's very efficient in terms of how it manages its water and nutrients.
The stem is really thick, and I'm suspecting now that it might be too much nitrogen. So we'll see how it tastes, and if it's undesirable, then I'll call the neighbors.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Thanks for calling. And Steele in Appleton, your turn now. Hi there.
Yeah, afternoon. Hey, on the condo roses, I was just anxiously waiting for the buds to come out, and they were looking all messed up. And I went down, and there's a beetle with about a quarter to 3/8 inches long, with a sort of a shiny copper over the wings, and then over the thoracic top side up by the head, it's greenish from one angle and purplish on the other, and they just bury their little mouth parts into the rose and just chewing them up.
Yeah, you probably either have Rose Schaefer's or the old Japanese beetle.
Yeah, it's one of the
What were the names? I was just
Rose Schaefer.
I'm sorry.
Rose Schaefer, Schaefer.
Uh huh.
Or Japanese beetles.
Oh, okay, because the golf course guys came by and I asked them if they knew, but
You're on a golf course?
So they're taking care of their insects and they're moving to your place because your stuff tastes better.
I hate to poison stuff. What should I just keep shaking them off and put them in my little container? And is that the best way?
If it's on a golf course, you're probably it could well be Japanese beetles,
right?
They'll just keep blowing in.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I'm just hanging around Mom's place a little more than usual, and I found them, and so gave me something to do, shaking them off.
Right. The other thing is you might want, if you don't want to use chemicals, you might want to look at some of the insecticidal soaps. It'll tend to keep some of them away because they don't like feeding on the product.
Okay, insecticidal soap. Great.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. And, right next to a golf course. That's
not good.
Well, you know, Phil Pelletieri, that lives not too far from a golf course. There's Japanese beetles in there all the time in his lawn. He can't get rid of them. Connie in Portage, hi to you.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, thanks for calling.
Good. I am a little embarrassed to call, but I haven't had a garden like in 30 years. And so I've made myself this nice little garden, and everything is beautiful. But I have something in it, I don't know what it is. I think they mismarked it. It says zucchini squash. There are these two huge white things laying there. I mean, they are 12 to 15 inches long and probably 6 or 7 inches around.
Well, they're a type of zucchini squash. There are some of the summer squashes now that do have a white fruit on them, and that's possibly what you might have.
How do you tell when they're ready, or are these things too ready?
They're too ready.
Usually with the
squashes, pick the summer squashes in particular, zucchini being part of those. The best time to harvest those fruit are when they're about 6 to 10 inches long.
Right.
And after they'll keep growing. They'll turn into, two
baseball bats.
Yeah. Well, these are bigger around than baseball bats.
Well, what they're doing is using all the nutrients up so the little guys don't have a chance to grow. So I would get rid of the two big ones.
I took them off there this morning because I've got relatives coming and I can't explain to them what they are.
Well, they're zucchini.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks for calling. Bill in Three Lakes, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
Thanks. I've got a question on my acorn squash. I've got a lot of flowering on there, but if I want the fruit, should I take the flowers off of there?
No. With the acorn squash, the first flowers you see are male flowers. And with the many of the cucurbits, there's male and female, and the first set of flowers are often male. Just leave them on there. Eventually, some female flowers will be coming along. Also, we've found that when it's very hot, we tend to have a more production of male flowers than female flowers. But it'll take care of itself. Don't worry about taking any off.
Okay. And then also, I'd like to plant some bulbs, but I don't want to have the hassle of taking them in and out in the fall and then putting them in the spring.
There's a number of hardy bulbs starting out with the tulips and daffodils, and many of those will be available in September for fall planting. And then there's some of the different types of onions. And so there's quite a few of those that are hardy enough to make it. The ones we have to dig are usually the canna lilies and the gladiola bulbs and some of those types of things.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Chuck in Onalaska, I believe, is next. So let's go to Chuck. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Larry. Boy, early on when you talked about not having much to do in the yard and going fishing, I had my hands cleaning out some panfish and had to wait till later to call. But I'm glad I got on. Thanks a lot. I've got a Marshall seedless ash tree in my backyard. It's about 10 years old. Been healthy all along, but it is dropping leaves like mad. I have to. I've got a yard vacuum leaf blower kind of thing, and sucking up leaves every couple of days to keep the yard looking nice. I don't see any sign of the leaves are dropping right from there where they join the stem.
Yeah.
And I don't see any sign of bugs or insects or whatnot.
Have you been watering that tree?
Not very religiously. Oh. Until about the last week and a half, I bought one of these root
waterers. Yeah.
Waterers, yep. And I've done that two or three times now. And now I've got a drip hose that's I've got it going around it.
Yep.
So I'm trying.
Yep.
But
take a look at where the leaves are falling off on the twig. If it's the older leaves, that's probably due to the fact they're not efficient anymore.
It's more up towards the top of each stem.
Okay. It's kind of yellow flagging. You might have what's called verticillium wilt or something like that that's in the tree. And that's a vascular type of thing. If you can get one of those branches that's losing the leaves, peel the bark back, and if you see some brown streaking in there, that's a pretty good indication that you might have that fungal problem.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
The only thing you can do is try to keep it healthy the rest of the year, that it'll outgrow the disease. But we find that many times that once it picks up that disease, it's very common in the soil. It works in through the root system and gets up into the upper portion. We see it on maples and ashes primarily. It's kind of a slow death.
Yeah, and it's I lost a lilac bush this summer to verticillium.
What did you call that, Bob?
Verticillium wilt.
Okay.
V-E-R-T-I-C-I-L-L.
Something like that.
Yeah, two L's on I-U-M.
Yeah. The leaves, when they come down, they look nice and green and color, no problem, but...
Well, what's happening is the verticillium wilt is plugging the vascular system, so it's not getting water up there.
Okay,
what you might want to look at doing is shopping around at one of the local nurseries and put a replacement tree kind of in the area that if you lose that one, you've got something else to fill its spot.
But it's pretty deadly, huh?
It is if it's dry, if it hasn't been watered, or if it doesn't, it's lacking in fertilizer. It's
And we found that Brian was Huddleston, who's our pathologist, was explaining last week that when we have dry periods like this, two things: we see that happening. If it's in the tree, they start defoliating, so we notice it. But also, trees are more prone to get that after we've had a droughty period, and we've gone through three summers now with the drought. And so it probably came in a couple of years ago, and it's just getting to the point where the disease is plugging up enough of the vascular system.
Yeah, we're getting some nice shade from it now. I hate to think about that. I appreciate the information.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Bob Tomisch, our guest today, senior lecturer, UW-Madison, and extension horticulturist. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guest Bob Tomisch from UW Extension Horticulture. Glad to have you listening again. Give us a call. I think we have one open line at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Ronnie and Hurley, your turn now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. This is Roy in Hurley.
Oh, Roy. I'm sorry, Roy.
Thank you. I'm glad I got on this morning. We have a problem up here with, beetles or bugs. What do we do with them? They show up summertime, and they just pile up like cordwood up here.
What do they look like?
they're something on the order of a potato bug with dots on them.
And what are they attacking?
They come into the house and they just pile up in here like you can't believe. You got to vacuum twice a day sometimes.
They have kind of a long snout on them?
Long nose? I wouldn't know about that.
I'm a little at a loss, but we had reports of what we call a strawberry root weevil that's been coming in. It's probably an insect about 3/8 of an inch long. They tend to have, they're kind of greenish in color, have a long snout on them. And why they move into houses, if it has to do with the, it's cooler inside or what, but they do that.
These are round bug looking outfits. And like I say, they got these yellowish spot on the brown.
Okay. I would say if you can throw a few of those in a container, run them down to your extension office there in Hurley, and if someone there can send us a digital picture, they'll know where to send it, either to Phil or myself. We all share our materials, and we'll try to get an answer back to you.
Thank you ever so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, if you got the extension office right there.
Right, yep.
Right there, you might as well run down there with a few, Roy. Maybe they can answer it, the question right there, too. Let's take some more calls. Scott in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good.
Same. I'm a part-time arborist out here in Watertown, and I've been noticing a decline in the silver maples this year. I notice a lot of chlorosis and a lot of large dead branches on otherwise normally healthy trees. And I'm wondering, is this mostly drought-induced, or is there something else going on?
Well, it's two things. It's drought-induced. That's one of the things. But the other thing, if you see some of those branches dying back, just like I described for the person that had the ash tree, peel back the bark and see if there's some brown streaking in there. Usually the silver maples are very aggressive growers, and so they often outgrow a lot of those fungal diseases or keep ahead of them. And this year, being as dry as it is, it might be catching up to some of those. Hmm. But do a double check on that.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
Catherine in Wausau, hello to you.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What I have in the yard is a lot of round holes, like somebody something is burrowing into the ground, and I'm wondering if that would be like chipmunks or what.
Yep.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah,
right. Right now we're seeing we had a lot of mold complaints, but those don't have come out all the way out of the ground. They just kind of leave a ridge through the lawn where they're feeding on insects. So that might be. But if you're seeing holes, it could be from chipmunks, it could be from mice, and toads right now are burrowing down into the ground a little bit just to get into the shade because they're so dry.
What can I do for that? Could I put in like some type of...
Well, first you're going to have to identify what's causing the hole and then make a decision. Are you going to live with it or are you going to have to eradicate it? And that's a decision you'll have to make.
One other thing, have you noticed any chipmunks?
We have a lot of chipmunks.
Yeah, that's probably the holes. We have chipmunks in our yard too, and I've been trying to decide if I want to leave them all there or if I want to figure out a way to trap them.
Adopt the neighbor's cat, huh?
Well, the cat, we have an indoor cat, and... he sits by the deck window, and that's his TV is watching the chipmunks.
Right. But are they doing damage other than making holes?
Well, no, they're making holes, and actually, I'm thinking that if you walked along that area, and you could maybe trip.
How big are they? Are they about the size of a half dollar?
No, they're larger.
Oh, larger.
You might have a little bigger friend there, a woodchuck.
Yeah, you might be having. How big is the diameter of the hole?
It's probably about 3 inches.
Oh, 3 inches.
Okay. Well, It could be a woodchuck working in there. Usually, that's a lot bigger than we're finding for a chipmunk.
Yeah.
So the other thing is watch the hole carefully. It's not wasps coming out if you're in a sandier soil.
No.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to find out what the culprit is first, and then make the decision. Are you going to, as a cat, watch the wildlife, or if it's something you want to eradicate?
Okay, and I have one more question, please.
All right.
We have a lot of pine trees, and our soil is dry and sandy, but I do water. Could I put would lime help that? Would lime help the lawn now?
Well, usually the lime applications, we apply it before we ever plant the lawn, and we really don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. The reason you're saying you don't have much turf grass there is because your pine trees are shading the lawn.
Right.
And the only way to counteract that is to prune your trees up a little bit higher so some sunlight does come into those areas. But it's going to, and eventually you're going to have to look at either mulching that, because the pine roots are close enough to the surface, they're going to take a lot of water away unless you water a lot. And that's just part of the management system you have to look with.
Yeah, and you might also have, if you've got Kentucky bluegrass in there instead of like a red fescue or something that's more shade tolerant, that could be an issue too.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to John in Mount Horeb. Hi, John.
Hi. Hey, guys. I got a question about a white swamp oak I had. It's probably about 6 feet tall. And this winter, the rabbits chewed all the way around it, about 3 inches up.
Ooh.
But below that, there's two big shoots coming up, and I pruned one off, and they're actually about 3 feet tall. Now, if I were to prune the dead part off and try to keep that shoot going, would that turn into another tree?
Yes. In fact, you're lucky that you got a shoot coming up, because usually when that bark is lost, what happens is they grow in the spring because there's water being pumped up, but there's no sugars made from the leaves shipped down to the root system, and the root system dies.
Okay.
But you're very lucky. Just cut it off and culture that one shoot you've got there. And
and then do something to keep the rabbits away this winter.
Yeah. If I were to do that, any type of tree will take this, because I also have some other trees I have that issue with. And if I just keep pruning them back so there's one shoot coming up.
Yep.
And cut the dead part off.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for calling, John. Appreciate your call. Joe in Cottage Grove, hi to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to, the gentleman that called a few callers ago was talking about losing leaves off his tree. I'm having a similar problem. I'm also wondering, with that tree, first of all, I need to identify what type of tree it is. Is there a website or anything through the university where I could go and actually look at, take a leaf that I have and compare it and see what type of tree this is?
Well, you can go to the University Arboretum. That would have something. Talk to one of your neighbors around there. They might tell you if it's a maple or whatever, unless it's an unusual tree.
It's not a maple. I know it's not a maple. So it's,
what does the leaf kind of look like?
It's elongated, it has the small ridges on the edge of it. So it's hard to explain. It's just
so it's sort of long and narrow, like an ash.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and I don't believe it's an ash, but. That's what I say. I've never seen a tree like this before. It's a beautiful tree, shade tree.
Really grow very fast, like it's got new long shoots on it?
No, it doesn't. Oh. Doesn't necessarily have long shoots. So I'm not. It is dropping a lot of leaves.
What you can do is to go down to the Dane County Extension Office, which isn't too far from Cottage Grove. It's just off of Femright in that Ag Drive area.
Okay.
And take it in the morning, because. The agent, of course, it's fair time now. But,
yeah.
So they'd like if you showed up at least to wait till Monday.
Lisa Johnson won't be there.
Well, Lisa's at the fair, I was told, this morning, and Ann Munson, who does the morning, she usually works from about 9 till 1. She's part-time, and she would know what it is in a flash.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Joe. Appreciate it. And Bill in Oshkosh, hi to you.
Hey, first-time listener, and great show, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had a question. I'm getting ready for the upcoming archery season, and two questions. I want to prune back some oak trees for getting some shooting lanes in, and I want to prune back some pine trees for the same reasons, too. Is there a better time than not to do pruning on those two types of trees?
Yeah, I hate to bend your arrow here for this year, especially with the oak trees. We're saying wait until it's dormant in the wintertime, and do the pruning when there's no insect activity, because they do. There are insects that carry oak wilt in, and then you won't have a tree to stand in at all.
You won't have any.
So if you can hold off on the pruning until then,
with the oaks at least.
Yeah.
The other you could go ahead probably.
I would wait till later in the fall. Yet.
Wait till a little later in the fall. Yeah.
The rut season doesn't start till November anyway.
Yeah. So you might. But the archery season starts in September. Right. I can see why he wants to do a little pruning now. But definitely stay away from those oaks. No doubt about it. And Jeff in La Crosse, hello.
Hello there. I have a number of Norway pine trees, and they're probably 45 years old, right in that ballpark, very, very close. And I'm noticing that I've lost a couple already, and I'm noticing another tree that's dying, the very, very tip.
Tip, and guys.
This year's growth is brown. And it takes, from my observations, probably about a full season or a year, a cycle, and the entire tree is dead.
Yep. What do we got there?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, with the drought, and then we've got some insects that are feeding on the new shoots and that, and that's what's killing some of the tree. And then we have our third culprit come in, some borers and that type of thing. I would suggest that if you have a fair number of them, have a borer culturist come in and evaluate. When they're that big, it's very difficult to treat those trees. But sometimes by thinning them out, it'll leave what is left to be much healthier and less prone to having some of that damage.
Yeah, makes good sense. Bob Tomasch, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomasch. Bob, senior lecturer in UW-Madison and extension horticulturist. So happy to have him along, and we've got lots to talk about with him. I know we've got questions about birch saplings. We've got questions about oak trees, hydrangeas, nuts falling, foliar feeding. We can talk about all kinds of things with him today. I know I wanted to ask him about raspberries, too, a little bit. And you can join in as well with your question, and we can talk the lawn. Not much to talk about there right now as the lawns aren't doing much, but we can talk the flowers and the vegetables and the trees and the shrubs. So give us a call. Here's that number. It's 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890 and email us at talk@wpr.org. News next. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomasch, senior lecturer, UW Extension horticulturist, here to answer your gardening questions. So give us a call at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Callers online, so let's go to the phones. Jerry in Beans Lake, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I have three oak trees approximately 4 to 5 inches in diameter. And right now they're showing a very, very bad sign of shriveling up. I thought it was possibly might have been aphid attack. However, I looked their leaves over and there seems to be no evidence of aphid. So I was just wondering, the area here possibly might have the lack of rain, but I'm not positive because I just arrived from Florida. So I've been looking at my trees here in Beaton's Lake, and they seem to be suffering. So I just wondered.
I wouldn't doubt if it wasn't water.
Yeah, well, it could be that. Are they the leaves that the lobes are pointed as they stick out, or are they rounded?
Well, these are red oaks.
Yeah, okay, red oaks.
They're pointed, yeah.
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 Have you had problem with oak wilt in the area?
Not recent. No, I haven't seen no evidence of oak wilt.
Well, It could be a number of things, but you might want to try putting the trees on a watering program, that 10 gallons per inch of trunk diameter, doing that about every 5 to 10 days. Every 5 to 7 days. If you're in a sandy area, you might want to look at every 5 days.
I have more mature oaks, and they don't seem to be suffering
right.
One iota.
Yeah. But see, were these possibly transplanted in?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. See, they have a whole different root system. Those that are native in the area have tap roots and everything else. These were somewhat root pruned, and so they don't have quite the root system established and aren't quite as competitive with the existing trees. So I would try to put on a some type of watering program for them and see if that brings them back out of it.
It's too late to stimulate them with some fertilizer.
No, I wouldn't do that now because it's going to stimulate growth, and then it's not going to get ready for winter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I shall try.
Yep, give it a shot. And And what's the how much is it again? How many gallons?
Well, there's a lot of different applications, but the one that seems to work that people can remember is 10 to 12 gallons per inch of trunk diameter. So if you have a trunk diameter, as he described, of about 5 inches, you'd need about 50 gallons of water a week.
50 gallons of water a week. Okay. Good luck, Jerry. Thank you. Aaron in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I planted some maple and birch saplings earlier this spring, and just the other morning I woke up and I found one of the little birch saplings had been nipped off by a rabbit. I have it in a little glass of water, and it's still doing quite well, and I was wondering if there's a chance that it'll sprout roots or if there's something I can add to the water to make it do so.
Those types of trees do not sprout roots very well. One, you have to collect the those cuttings. In the spring, that's one time you do it, but you're just keeping it happy for a short time.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for calling, Aaron. I have to go out and get some more and get them...
Do it one more time, right?
Protected. Mike and Seneca, hello to you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of things here. I've had good luck foliar feeding when, like, drought conditions exist. And it seems, and I use Miracle-Gro and water in a backpack sprayer if I got a lot of plants or one of these just ones you carry. And I do the underside of the leaves as well as the top. And it seems like that stimulates growth as well as inhibits any, you know, effects from the drought. And I was wondering if it would work to do this on other types of plants. I never tried it on anything but squash or vine-related plants. The other question is, I've got a considerable amount of black walnut trees around the place, and I sell the walnuts. They've been dropping at least for a month now. I've opened some up, and they're where the nut meats are. It's just milky. They're immature. And if this continues, there won't be any mature ones. I'm concerned what causes that, and if everybody else is having the same dilemma. Otherwise, you know, will there be enough?
Are you watering those oaks? Those walnuts?
No, they're around the perimeter of the property. I couldn't begin to generate enough water to do anything there. It's out in the country, you know. It's...
Are you watering your vegetables that you're foliar feeding?
Yes.
Okay.
But I haven't been. I didn't start the foliar feeding this year yet, and I have some summer squash that the plants seem to kind of be vegetating. They haven't shot runners out yet, and I'm concerned if they're going to make it. I've been thinning them out, and I thought, well, maybe if I foliar feed these as well as the tomatoes aren't doing too well either.
Well, part of the fact that they're not stooling out is the fact that it's so hot. Once we get, I mean, it's stressing the plants. Okay, when it comes to foliar feeding, just a couple words there. Plants are designed to absorb nutrients more through the root system than the foliar structure. So I leave that up to everybody else. But when you foliar feed, what you're doing is those nutrients are sometimes getting washed off of the plant, and then they're absorbed through the root system. And when you're watering, you're providing that opportunity for the plant. So foliar feeding isn't going to make too much difference. Just watering is probably going to help more than anything. And maybe fertilizing with the Miracle-Gro on the soil surface will give you the benefit that you need. As for the nuts, what's happening is the trees, because of the drought, are self-pruning. They're getting rid of some extras. And I told many of the ag agents this morning when we had our meeting that if we have a big wind or a heavy rain, we're going to receive a lot of calls that the apples are falling off the tree. And part of it is one, there's sometimes insects that go in there and feed on the meat in the case of your black walnuts or on the seeds of the apple. And when they don't have a full complement of seeds, it's not producing hormones to keep it onto the tree. The tree is stressed right now, and so it's going to lose a lot of the fruit that are on there. They're not going to ripen, and if we get that wind or whatever. What's happening with your black walnuts is just taking care of itself. It's going to feed a few good ones, but it's going to drop a lot of those others that aren't quite as big.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Mike. Thanks very much for calling. Yeah, they have to get rid of that, get rid of those nuts in order to kind of survive in a way.
Well, it's not going to get rid of all of them.
But
And when we look at an apple tree, we look at the whitewood blossoms. At the end of the year, only between 4 and 15 out of every 100 blossoms ever end up as an apple. And the same thing happens on walnuts and oak trees and things like that. But we don't normally consume the acorns or keep track of it like we do with the apple trees.
I'm wondering about apple scab flowering crabs this year. We have, our neighbor has one, and usually by long about now it's losing its leaves. It's not doing that this year.
Well, what happened is it was dry earlier this year, and right during the time when we have our primary infection, which is usually during the month of May, it was dry already. And so the fungal organisms didn't really get started on those leaves like we do in other years. So they've kind of held out this year. One of the benefits of the drought, that's one fungus that doesn't do as well in the dry conditions.
On to Craig in Green Bay. Hi, Craig.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Last year I planted two hydrangea bushes, and this year one came up, one didn't. The problem that I'm having is the new one, as opposed to the one that I thought was established, is the fact that if I don't keep watering them, then they start to wilt on me. A friend came over and told me that because of the fact that I'm watering them on a continuous basis, that apparently there's some deep roots that aren't established. And I would think that the one that I planted or the one that came up last year would be established, but I'm having the same problem with that one. If I don't water them every couple of days, then they start to droop, and I'm thinking, well, how much stress can these take, you know, before they're...
Yeah.
Before they're finally going to kick in. And, you know, I drive around town and everybody else's hydrangeas are, you know, they're big and they're full, and I don't see any of them out there watering. So I'm just wondering, you know, if it's location or if it's,
location is one. They do need full sun. The other thing is, do you have a black walnut close by? I'm not sure. There are certain plants that don't do well in black walnuts area.
I have a black walnut, but it's way in the backyard.
Yeah, well, don't take the leaves from it and put it on your shrubbery because you carry the juglan material over to that. Water them this year, and then next spring, just don't be quite as rigorous in your watering, and that'll force roots to form deeper. Is it the variety Everlasting?
Well, let me see here. I'm thinking that it is the Everlasting.
They become very popular. It's a recent release by University of Minnesota.
Right.
One of the things we're finding, these are reports that I get from different people around the state, that's one that the one that died on you probably didn't make it over winter, and that they're probably not quite as winter hardy as they once we thought they were.
Uh-huh.
So that's one issue. Right now, with the wilting, you might have a fungal disease there, too. So it could be a couple of things. But I just water them, keep them alive, and then see what happens next year.
And you know what?
Go ahead.
Just to add one more thing. Sometimes the plants will wilt during the day, but if you look...
At night, they
might look very, very good. So you might take a look at that hydrangea, you know, along about dark or after dark and see what it looks like.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is in the morning, they can be totally limp, and I can water them, and within an hour later, I mean, even the flowers, everything are standing right back up again.
Yeah.
Well, they have large leaves. I was looking at some a couple days ago, and what was interesting is being that it's been so dry, the outer margin of the leaves sometimes will brown on some trees, or they stop growing, and when we do water, they'll tend to pucker because the inner portion of the center part of the leaf, those cells expand, but that outer margin was so damaged that it didn't, and so you'll have some natural puckering that occurs.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Patrick in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if softened water promotes blossom end rot on my tomato plants. I have some tomato plants in containers on the patio, and early in the season when I first brought the plants home, I watered for maybe a month or so with softened water from the tap.
Yeah.
I got some blossom end rot on the first fruit of the season. Since I switched to the unsoftened, the hard water in the area, the problem seems to have gone away.
I'm wondering if there's a correlation.
Well, there might be a correlation because softened water has a different pH than your regular water. When the pH tends to go very high or very low, in the case of the softened water, it doesn't allow certain nutrients to go into solution or be absorbed by the roots. And so what's happening is possibly with the softened water, the calcium was tied up and not made available to the plant. And when you switched, it changed the pH a little bit and allowed that calcium to be absorbed. So observation on your part might be substantiated by the fact of hard and soft water.
Yep.
Well, bottom line, stay off the softened water.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yep, you don't want that. Judith in Grand Marsh, your turn. Hi, Judith.
Hi, thanks so much.
Sure.
I wonder how you get large companies to cooperate in your oak wilt and other reasons for not trimming oak trees. We're dealing with the electric company extending the right-of-way, and with us and neighbors, where it's all woods up here, and this will be 30 feet by about half a mile, and it's solid oak trees.
Oh.
We've just been infested with gypsy moth. It's, you know, about the drought, and there's oak wilt in the area. We have not been hit yet. And the contractor said that the DNR told him that cutting after July 1st was fine, as long as, now he said that they would paint the wounds. I said, I'm not only concerned about the trees that are cut completely down, but, you know, you can be real careful and you wound a nearby tree. And they're telling me that this is going to be okay, and we're quite concerned.
Well, I would, you've got a couple of challenges there. One, yes, after July, there's different type of growth and cell divisions, and we have certain insects that aren't quite as problematic. That's probably why they're justifying their comment. But if you can get those, I'm surprised the power company. Most power companies are fairly astute to that, and they'll hold off until the winter months before they do some of their pruning.
Not only that, but I think the information he gave you about July 1st is now not the information that the Department of Natural Resources is sending out, as a matter of fact. I think it used to be July 1st, but
mm-hmm.
that's changed.
That's changed now, yes.
And do you know what the date is from them?
I think they say they encourage people to wait until the trees are dormant.
Dormant, so winter, more or less.
Yep.
And they're telling us it's not for a project. It's just that they're going to
come
do
through.
This for storms or whatever. But so I should, I can quote you and I can quote.
Yeah, go online. Well, go online to the, well, let's see, where are you from? Grand Marsh.
Grand Marsh, and we're not hooked up online.
No, but you can go to the extension office and they'll pull the publications off on
okay.
Oak Wilt. And in there will be the dates and stuff that for pruning and those types of things. And
mm-hmm.
so you'd have those research-backed information. I would definitely go down to your extension office and pull those bulletins. And they can do a web search and pull even some additional information.
Yeah, the DNRs, and I wish I could remember the new date that they said. They, in fact, I think you're right. They went, instead of giving a date, they've sort of changed. But the extension office would be able to get you the exact DNR information on it, too, off their website. So good luck, and thanks very much for calling.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it. Joanne in Fitchburg, your turn now. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions for your guest. One is I had planted, these are pretty old, more than about 8-9 years old, climbing roses. And they had bloom until last year. And one of them was weaker. The other one had full bloom. But and at the end of the summer, in the fall, actually, I cut some of the two large branches, which were climbing into my bedroom. But this year I'm getting new branches and new leaves, but there is no buds, no flowers.
Right, but let them continue to grow because the flower buds should develop on the terminate on the ends of those or terminal ends of those shoots that are there. You probably have removed probably more wood than you should have, and so therefore it's going to take a while for that new growth to establish those buds.
Are you sure? How do I make sure they're not coming from below the stack?
Oh, I see what you mean. Usually, yeah. They'll have a different shape.
It's a
They're
going to
be
bush.
Thorny. You're right. If you're, what you're, I see what you're doing. They were. You're saying that your roses were grafted onto a rootstock, And you can usually tell if you have the old existing shoot, it's going to have a difference in thorns is one example that you might find, or the length of growth on your trellis types are going to be kind of a windy type branch growth, whereas on the rootstock, they'll be very stiff and upright.
Oh, okay. No, the needles are the same kind, and they're the same kind of a stock. The reason I had to move the old branches, there were some dead.
Yep.
They were wood. But I left some in the core just to make sure, because they do grow on the some dead branches. And so I left some, but I am not getting, so I may not get any flowers this year.
You should by the end, towards fall.
Okay. Other thing is on another it's a Rosa rugosa.
Yeah.
I'm having some yellow-black spots and some holes in the bottom leaves and bottom branches, which are the older branches.
It's a fungus called black spot, and you have to use a fungicide to control that. And that's one thing. The holes are probably by an insect. And some of our leaf rollers and leaf cutting bees, as we call them, are out there cutting these. Oh, they're probably about a half inch circle, maybe just a little bit less. And they take that and then they carry it to their nest to feed their young. So,
what kind of fungicide should I use? Should I use the diazinon?
Diazinon is an insecticide. What you would do is go to a garden center and ask them for a fungicide for black spot on rose.
Like Benamil?
Something like that, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. And Steve in Kewaunee, hello to you.
Hi, thanks. I got a tree in the wrong place. It's growing out of a bush. It's a maple tree, a volunteer, and it's growing into sewers and bad things. So we skinned it last year about 3 feet up, and it's growing profusely. How do you kill this
thing? You skinned
it.
How big? What's the trunk diameter?
Ooh, maybe 6 to 8, maybe 10.
Oh. Cut it off. And then treat the right where you cut it off with Roundup.
Okay, but the question is, why is it growing if it doesn't have the cambium layers?
Well, sometimes
it's just going nuts.
It'll grow because there are still sending water up and sugars down in the inner vessels, especially if it's a real succulent type tree. It's probably tapped into your sewer line already, so it's got a good healthy start.
It's got good nutrition.
If you have other trees close by. The root grafts, no, not the bushes, another maple tree close by, it might have a root graft onto that, and so that's keeping that root system functioning.
So
okay.
Whack it off.
Will do.
All right, thanks for calling.
So one thing, you might see another maple down the road here, another 50 feet away dying, and that's probably the one that was connected to the root system, the one you want to get rid of.
Rick in Sturgeon Bay, hello.
Hello, thank you. We've got a persimmon tree that's about 12 feet tall, and when it was younger, it had delicious fruit. They didn't have any seeds because there are no other persimmon trees nearby. But the last two summers, the fruit got up to about a half inch in diameter, and then it turned black and fell off. So we haven't had any crop last year, and it looks like it's all gone this year.
Okay.
Last year, we thought it was maybe because of the dry weather, this year we watered it, and that didn't seem to help.
Okay, what I would do is when those fruit turn black is slice a couple open just to see if there's any insect that's feeding inside there.
Okay.
I would check that out. Also, has the tree become shaded by another tree or something like that?
No.
Oh. It could be there's a whole host of things. It could be that, with the winter conditions being somewhat different or whatever, but... persimmons, you're right at the northern edge for growing some of those up there.
Yeah, right.
So it's hard to tell what that one is going to be.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Mary and Toma, you have a quick one?
Oh, yeah. I put some raspberry plants in. They're autumn Britain, and I just got them from Young. Do I do any pruning to them at all, or would I start pruning next season?
Yes. You have a fall-bearing type. Water them, fertilize them as best you can. Then about 1st of December, cut them off right to the ground. That's your pruning.
Around December.
Then next spring, what it'll do is what you're doing now is building the root system, so you don't want to do any pruning. Next spring, water, fertilize according to what the bulletin suggests, and you should have fruit on the tips of those canes, and that usually that variety will start ripening by the first week of August.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. And Bob, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. You'll be back again, I hope.
Well, I'm sure we'll find another Friday.
All right. Bob Tomich, our guest today, senior lecturer in UW-Madison and UW Extension Horticulture. Always fun to have him along, and I know his words of advice, take care of those trees out there. Get those trees watered. If they're looking bad, it's probably, most likely, it's a lack of water. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.